This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
This is Raquel Willis from Queer Chronicles. Right now, there are close to 500 anti-LGBTQ plus bills in state legislatures across the country. Lambda Legal is leading the charge against these hateful bills that target mostly trans and non-binary people. You can fight discrimination and help write the next chapter of Lambda Legal history. To learn more about their open cases and to donate, visit lambdalegal.org. That's lambdalegal.org.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender-inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked if movies have women in them. Are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast. Start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Welcome to the Bechdel cast.
Sorry to sound so excited. I guess this isn't really. So, bonus episode alert.
Yeah. We're doing an episode it's a bonus, but it's grim.
It's a grim bonus. It's still the scariest month of the year.
True.
And truly the news has been proving it is the scariest month of the year. So we are doing a bonus episode. Obviously, if you're clicking on it, you know what it's about. It's about the 1979 Woody Allen movie Manhattan.
And why have we chosen to do this movie?
Oh, God. I mean, we really dug deep inside. No, we literally, like, woke up and looked at the screens that we sleep next to, and it said that, you know, everything is a nightmare, which we knew.
Yes.
Harvey Weinstein.
Woody Allen. Dozens of others.
Right. It's been, I mean, obviously a deeply troubling couple of weeks for all the allegations that are coming out. It's very positive that they're being brought out to the world, but it's hard.
Right. Especially because victims who are coming forward are receiving some backlash, especially Woody Allen saying things like, oh, I don't support what Harvey Weinstein did, but, you know, let's not start a witch hunt.
Ugh.
You know, witch hunts, those things that men used to do to women for no reason other than they were threatened by women existing in the world around them.
Right. So we thought it would be perhaps useful to look back on an example of a very predatory movie made by an allegedly very predatory person and talk about it, because it is wild watching this movie now. It came out, what, 38 years ago now. It is wild watching this movie and ever thinking that this was like, this is amazing. Like, this isn't a hard movie to watch at all.
Right. I saw it for the first time probably in college, probably around 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the only time I had seen it, but I didn't remember even what it was about. I didn't remember that a 42-year-old man was in a relationship with a 17-year-old girl. I just didn't remember that that's what the story was, because 10 years ago, you know, I guess I just wasn't... that's weird, and then I just forgot about it, whereas today...
Well,
like,
and I think that a lot of work is done by the movie itself to really glaze over any problems that are there, where, I mean, we'll get into that too, where no one at the movie really raises a stink other than a passing joke at the fact that there are crimes happening in front of them.
Right.
So I think that the world Woody Allen creates, and... I mean, we weren't alive for it, but it seems like the general society at that time did not point stuff like this out, and so the movie doesn't point it out, and that's bad. I first saw this movie in college as well, but it did bother me quite a bit because I saw this movie, this would have been late 2013, mm-hmm. which is when allegations about Woody Allen were first starting to surface. It like really exploded in early 2014, but late 2013 there was rumblings and I had to take a class to graduate school. And so I ended up having to take this class about Charlie Kaufman, Woody Allen, and Billy Wilder films. So we had to watch a lot of Woody Allen films, and I recall not liking them, not doing well in the class, and getting in trouble for specifically being like, this is gross, why is he fucking a kid? Like, that in particular got me in trouble in that class.
See, so I took a directing class, because, you know, I did go to film school twice.
Hot brag! What?
And I was given, like, the script to a scene in Manhattan to be like, okay, let's see how you would direct this. And it's the scene between Woody Allen's character and Tracy's character, the 17-year-old girl.
No kidding, whoa.
The one where they're in bed, and he has just moved into his new apartment, and he's talking about, like, the water being brown, and the noises from his neighbors and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And, like, at the time, I was just like, oh, okay, I'll just direct this scene. Like, it didn't really occur to me, like, how gross and problematic. And that was right. A school assignment. Like, I had to
That's crazy.
Make,
yeah. I mean, it was like, yeah, I had...
What was my professor thinking?
I literally had no choice but to watch these Woody... Or I couldn't graduate. Like, yeah. It's just great. And also, I... Not to say this was a benefit in any way, but I was armed with a lot more information in late 2013 of, like... This guy was basically being, I mean, not that there was no way to tell as he had already married his daughter, right. But there were serious allegations coming out and it just felt wrong to be idolizing this work in any way, especially when it's just like he really is just laying it out in front of you of like, I'm a predator, I fuck kids, I do, like, you're just like, oh.
He's unapologetic about it and it's nuts.
Not even unapologetic, like, he's victimizing himself.
Right.
About, like, it's just, okay, so let's talk about the movie.
Yes.
Manhattan comes out in 1979, after Annie Hall, after he's sort of said that, I guess we're doing this now, you know, we're watching Woody Allen do the same fucking thing 95 times, great.
Yeah, I'll do the recap. Manhattan is about a Woody Allen type character.
It's about Woody Allen.
About Woody Allen. His character, though, is named Isaac, and he is in a relationship with a 17-year-old woman.
Funny,
already.
Edgy.
Great. And everyone's like, wow, she's beautiful. And he's like, she's 17.
In public. In public. She's in high school. She's 17. Isn't this funny? Isn't this weird? And the characters respond by saying, yeah, that is weird. That is funny. Where it's just like, I, you know, we weren't there in 1979, but I find it very hard to believe that there's two characters responding, oh, that is so weird. Like, it's just... It's
because it was a crime. Because toward the end, she's like, I turned 18, so I'm legal now. Acknowledging that the sex they were having before was not legal, which it wasn't, and no one gave any shit about it. So,
no, not even the not even the characters in the movie who Woody Allen and another straight white guy whose name eludes me at this
time. Oh, it's Yale.
No, like the co-writer for the movie.
Oh, Marshall Brickman.
Marshall Brickman. So they write this movie together. They're writing all these female characters, meaning they're directing, you know, like Diane Keaton's character, who on paper and in I think several parts of the movie is a good character.
I would agree.
Who's
yeah.
given a background, and it's like, man, I hate that there's a good female character in this movie. But I mean, she is armed with all the information. She is intelligent.
She's very outspoken.
Very outspoken. Doesn't seem to care. Doesn't seem to care. And it's like, how fucking convenient that your very empowered female character just also doesn't seem to notice that you're fucking a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And if she mentions it as like, so weird that this is going on.
At one point, so there's a character named Yale, which is Woody Allen's character's best friend,
right.
And he's married to Emily. At one point, Emily says, oh no, I don't think 17's too young. That's like in the
right.
first 15 minutes of the movie.
And I know, and to all you flaming hot trolls out there who are like, the women in the movie, yeah, but the women in the movie, those words weren't put there by a woman. They were put there by two men.
Yeah.
So it's like these relatively realized female characters spouting nonsense. Like, it's just, Anyways, sorry.
I love how worked up we are.
It's an infuriating movie to watch. It's at times deeply uncomfortable. We laughed at two different parts, and that was upsetting too.
Yeah, we were like, oh, I hate that I found that funny.
I hate the chuckle. I hated it. It was just, oh God. Okay, anyways, sorry.
So, okay. So, Isaac is dating a 17-year-old woman. His friend Yale is married, but he starts seeing this woman, Mary, played by Diane Keaton. Woody Allen meets Mary, and he's like, oh, I like her too.
There's another thing in here where it's just like, oh, we're going to forgive him for these heinous crimes he's committing because he's awkward. Again, the use of an awkward personality as an excuse to do fucking insane things.
I'm going to go ahead and coin the term stuttercore. This is a stuttercore movie. All Woody Allen movies are stuttercore. And
which just is to say, you can shave 15 minutes off the top of the fucking movie.
Right. So he meets Mary, and they get off to a rocky start, but then he starts to like Mary, and Mary starts to like him, so he's conflicted. Oh, do I stay with this 17-year-old girl, or do I hang out with Mary, even though she's also dating my friend Yale? There's like kind of all this back and forth.
Also, he's writing a book.
He's writing a book. He quits his job as a TV writer.
He's an artiste, which comes into play later.
He surrounds himself with affluent, white, fucking pretentious people. And it's dumb.
Which I know. But like, it's very intentional what Woody Allen chooses to satirize in this movie and what he does not choose to satirize in this movie. Because I think he is satirizing bullshit intellectualism quite a bit by being like, look at these people. They're so smart. They're at museums and observatories and planetariums all the time, but they don't have it together. Like, it's, you know, he's commenting on that. The things he is not commenting on are just as glaring.
Oh, sure.
Such as he is fucking a kid.
Yeah.
This is barely commented on. And in the way it's commented on, Tracy, Marielle Hemingway's character, is being developed at the expense of the protagonist, which is like another... Sorry, yeah. Continue.
No. I mean, I'm almost done. I don't really know what else happens. It's not an exciting movie. So at some point, he breaks up with Tracy, the 17-year-old girl. He starts to go in sort of full force with Mary and their relationship. And then Mary, meanwhile, is like, actually, I think I still love Yale. So she and Yale kind of get back together. And then Woody Allen's character is like, well, I'm lonely, so I better go back to the child.
But here's the twist. She's not a child now.
She's 18.
Fucking crazy.
Having gaslit her throughout the entire movie because she's like, I might want to go and study in London. And he's like, yeah, you should. Actually, we probably shouldn't be together. You're young, but like not to any point where he's gonna really do anything about it. And then at the end, she's like, okay, I'm gonna go to London like you said I should. And he's like, actually,
Lonely now.
Now I don't have anyone to validate me.
And then she's, you know, but what does 6 months matter if we're in love? Which is, you know, a very 18-year-old thing to say.
Mm-hmm.
And it ends with him like smiling and be like, oh yeah, maybe there's no... There's never even the looming threat of a consequence for treating this situation the way he does, for committing a crime over and over and over. It's openly discussed between the two characters. You can't even call it an open secret. It's not a secret. He's taking her out in public.
Yeah.
We don't know that much about her parents or were they...
I would say nothing. We know nothing. We really know nothing about her character apart from her age and that she apparently is interested in acting. And going abroad to study that.
Right. And she, you know, goes to high school. This trope we've talked about before, and it applies more to sci-fi characters generally, but I did want to bring up the Born Sexy Yesterday trope.
Oh, yeah.
And that with Tracy and Isaac, it's like this, the dynamic and what we sort of are led to believe is appealing about it for Isaac is that he's teaching this girl. He's teaching her intellectually. He's teaching her, he's raping her, but he's teaching her sexually, or that's his impression, or whatever. Just the fact that there's no point in the movie where it's brought up as anything but a funny thing, it is never addressed as a crime. It's indirectly addressed as a crime where it's a joke that she's legal now.
Right.
And there's no threat that he will receive any punishment, and in fact he doesn't, and he still hasn't. So great for Woody Allen. Fuck off.
Yeah, I was at a bar last night, and
brag.
I was like, yeah, brag. And I was like, oh, sorry I'm late. I had to watch Manhattan. We're doing it tomorrow on my podcast. And my friends were like, oh, what? Why? And I'm like, well, what better way to introduce all the fucking problematic shit that's happening in Hollywood right now, and that has always been happening,
than a widely regarded movie where a major plot point is repeated rape. Amazing. There, for anyone who is like, but wait, okay, let's think, top of the dome, cinematography, sure, great. There was a scene in the planetarium where lights are used. George Gershwin, very talented man, also deeply problematic. You can go into that Google hole yourself. New York, a city that exists. The technical merits of this movie is not what we're here to discuss. So if that's where you're coming from in terms of like, but the rapes look so good, no, fuck off, enjoy your life. Also, I don't like this movie. Like, it's not...
It's, oh, yeah.
I hate that it made me chuckle. I hate it.
Same. I have a deep mistrust for anyone who's like, yeah, Manhattan's a great film. Fuck off! No, yeah. It's not.
Goodbye. We have to be going. So we've discussed... Tracy is obviously the glaring major issue in this movie. But the other two main female characters are Mary, Diane Keaton's character, and Jill, who is Woody Allen's second ex-wife.
Correct. I didn't mention her in the recap. She's played by Meryl Streep. And she's depicted as this, like,
shrewish character.
Yeah.
So the plot point there is, if, unless I'm mistaken, she is writing a memoir about her
marriage.
What a shitty partner Woody Allen was, but like a tell-all kind of memoir thing.
Yeah.
She is also now living with her girlfriend and raising Woody Allen's son. She has primary custody of Woody Allen's and her son.
Right.
And Woody Allen is very uncomfortable with two women raising his son.
Oh, yeah.
Which is brought up as a joke. And sort of, there's the scene, we see like one longish scene between Isaac and the son, where you mentioned he hits his son.
He hits his son because his son's trying to get his dad to buy him like a toy boat.
Very.
And he's pointing to the bigger, more expensive one. And then Woody Allen just like strikes him in the head.
So there's that. And then in the next cut, they're at some sort of
restaurant.
Mm-hmm. And Isaac is saying like, oh, we could like, you know, basically presents his son with like, I know you're being raised by two women, but don't forget about toxic masculinity. Like, it's just insane. Where he talks about picking up women.
Yeah.
As, like, a joke to his kid.
Yeah, he's like, if you were quicker, we could have picked those women up. Just, you know, teaching him
just like,
how to be a fucking creep.
Tee-hee. Also, it doesn't take too much of a leap to say that Woody Allen is kind of villainizing Jill, Meryl Streep's character's sexuality as well.
Oh, definitely.
Like, he's
yeah.
just saying, like, this shrewish gay woman. And it's also presented, and I thought this was interesting. I was reading Roger Ebert went back and watched this movie and had more come about it in 2001. He writes about this character specifically in a way that I think was weird, where he says, Isaac's former wife, Meryl Streep, left him to live with a woman and writes a bestseller ridiculing their marriage and love life. We doubt her new relationship is sound if it leaves her so obsessed with the previous one. That is, I mean, and I'm maybe that is how that reads to another straight white man.
Uh-huh.
But that, I mean, and
I mean,
think
that's
we
also just pure speculation because you don't see that much of their relationship on screen.
But I think we are led to believe that, you know, it's like, well, Jill can't get over it, and she's trying to capitalize on what a shitty partner he was, and now she dates a woman, where I feel like almost the implication is Woody Allen was such a bad husband that he turned her gay. That was what I took away.
That's sort of how he, I think,
he
that character, yeah.
I think that that's what the movie thinks, you mm-hmm. know, regardless of the integrity of this character who deserved better. I don't know. I mean, and that is an individual's read. But I think the fact that a professional movie critic's read was like, well, she's still so hung up on him. It's like, you can't conflate trauma with being in love.
Right.
And still being hung... Like, being angry about someone abusing you does not equal, she's still in love with him. Like, but I think that that is what the movie would have you believe, and that bothered
me. Oh, sure. Well, I made a list of all the things, or not even, I probably didn't even hit all of them, but many of the
things... You have a comprehensive list. Let's not shortchange okay. this list.
But I'm saying that there were so many that I probably missed some. Because sure. this is such a fucking, again, stuttercore movie that I can't even... Not to shame people with stutters.
No stutter shaming.
No stutter shaming here. I'm just saying that Woody Allen should fall off the edge of the planet.
Sure.
So, I made a list of all the things that he says either to or about women in the movie. The first one is, he's talking to Tracy. This is after she's like, I think I'm in love with you for the first time, pretty early on in the movie. Mm-hmm. And he says, don't get carried away. You're a kid. As long as the cops don't burst in, we're going to break a couple records. And then later he's like, get dressed.
He's like, I'm going to fuck a kid more than anyone's ever fucked a kid. Jesus Christ.
And then he's like, get dressed because you got to get out of here. I don't want you to be comfortable here. You can't stay here.
Right. Does all he can to make Tracy's character not feel like she is a permanent fixture in his life.
Totally. That, and this is like sort of the beginning of him gaslighting her, because constantly mm-hmm. throughout the movie he's saying, you're too young. You don't understand what love is, because she keeps being like, I love you.
She literally says over and over, take me seriously. Listen to me.
Yeah.
And then he's
just like, you're not old enough. Like, you don't know what love is. You're too young.
Yeah, but that criticism is never turned inward of like, maybe this is the wrong thing to be doing, because it ends with, oh, maybe I will get to fuck this kid again. Like, okay, sorry, continue your list.
Later, he says to Jill, his ex-wife, Meryl Streep, mm-hmm. of the two of us, I was not the immoral, psychotic, promiscuous one.
Oh, is that a reference to her sexuality?
I think probably so.
Excellent. Right.
Later on, to Tracy, and this is after she's like, oh, you know, maybe people aren't meant to just, like, be with one person forever. It's kind of gone out of date. Again, more gaslighting, because he's like, don't you tell me what's gone out of date. You're 17. You were brought up on drugs, television, and the pill.
Gaslighting, belittling her experience. He knows better.
Yeah.
Because he has less hair.
And then this is after he meets Mary, he says about her, what a creep. She was overbearing. She was terrible. She was all cerebral. If she said one more thing about Bergman, I would have knocked her other contact lens out.
So, I don't like that she's smart. I want to hit her. Uh-huh. Okay, I'll just help to translate.
Please. this is good. Shortly after that, he says about Jill, I got a divorce because my ex-wife left me for another woman. Mary says, that must have been really demoralizing. Isaac says, I tried to run them both over with a car. Mary says, that's incredible sexual humiliation, and I think that's enough to turn you off of women. Which I found to be a very bizarre scene, because Mary has been set up, and later on in the movie continues to be, the smartest and most rational in her thinking and all of that. But because this character was written by two men, mm-hmm. she's just reinforcing what Woody Allen actually thinks, which is, yeah, for me to have been left by a woman for another woman, how humiliating.
Well, I think that this is sort of something that comes up in a lot of Woody Allen's movies, where I wish I had a snappier title for it, but a feminist character written by a man. So not really a feminist character, mm-hmm. but one that in appearance, in behavior, in profession, there's enough there that you're just like, oh, you know, like you would trust Diane Keaton's character, but she's still being written by a villain, basically.
Right.
And so when she glosses over the fact that Woody Allen's fucking a kid, when she glosses over villainizing queer people, as an audience member, you know, if you're not, you know, you're sort of being told, eh, don't think about it. The character you trust thinks that, you know,
right.
queer people's lives don't matter either. And
stupid people with no critical thinking skills would just be like, yeah, I sure. agree.
Right. Or people who have not encountered alternate ways of thinking. Mm-hmm. Because Woody Allen's, all of his work is, we're told, is so intellectual and so smart that it's like, where are you supposed to be questioning? Where are you not supposed to be questioning?
Yeah.
He directs your focus in very deliberate ways and also directs your focus away. Okay, translation. I tried to kill gay people who hurt my feelings. Response, that sucks for you.
And I can understand why you would have done that.
I get it. Would have done the same thing myself. Fuck that. Moving on.
Later on, he says to Mary, well, first Mary's talking about Tracy, and she's like, 16 years old, no possible threat at all. Isaac says, she's 17. You know, sometimes you have a losing personality. Mary, what do you want? I'm honest. I say what's on my mind, and if you can't take it, then fuck off. Isaac, I like the way you express yourself, too. It's pithy, yet degenerate. You get many dates? I don't think so.
A very witty exchange in which women being smart is stupid and people calling Woody Allen out on his bullshit is stupid.
Yep. There's more. Don't worry.
Oh, good.
This is about Jill. He's talking to Mary. He says, my son is being raised by two women. Mary says, I've read studies. You don't need a man. Two mothers are absolutely fine. Isaac says, I feel very few people survive one mother.
This is Woody Allen saying, probably something happened to me a very long time ago that was emasculating, and now for the next 60 plus years, I will take it out on any woman I come into contact with.
Yes. And then again about his mother later on, Isaac says, I wrote a short story about my mother, the castrating Zionist.
This is Woody Allen saying, I'm trying to make this seem like a fun Jewish caricature, but what it actually is I hate every woman I've ever met.
All of these exchanges, by the way, happen in the first half hour of the movie.
Yeah.
And then this is when I got very frustrated and maybe stopped paying as close attention, but there's a few more.
Yeah.
Later to Jill, he is gaslighting her and saying, I did not try to run you and your lover over with my car.
Even though he confirmed that earlier in the movie.
Exactly. Yeah. And she's like, well, what were you doing by the cabin anyway? And he's like, I was spying on you.
there's no words. I think he really hit the nail on the head on that one.
Yeah. No yeah. Translation needed.
Oh, we talked about this one.
We talked about that one. Yeah, that was the one where he's next to two women in the restaurant and he's explaining to his son how they should have picked them up and fucked them. You know, his son, a 6-year-old boy.
And obviously, again, haters, it is written as a joke, but I would argue that that is just as much of a problem. That he's like, hey, here's a terrible way to think about women. And then, like, a little winky to the audience, like, this is funny. He's never gonna learn. Like, it's not funny.
Nope. And then later on to Jill, this is after her book has come out about their relationship. He opens the door and says, I came here to strangle you.
Well, sure. Very funny, great joke. So the three main characters, Tracy is just you're right, I didn't even realize how little we know about her, other than she sometimes
has exams.
Which we are to believe, you know, probably Woody Allen's character doesn't know a lot about her either, because they don't discuss parts of her life very often. Almost like he's never asked. Then we have Diane Keaton's character, who is just maybe the most troubling of all, because she's just a bunch of smoke and mirrors in terms of a fully realized female character, where all the elements are there, but it's hollow and rings totally hollow, and that just sucks.
Yeah. There are a few moments where I'm like, okay, I'm glad that she does this thing or says this thing.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that.
Well, there's a moment where she's talking to a director friend of hers, and he's talking about this movie he's directing about a man who's such a sexual dynamo.
Oh, that right, yeah.
Anytime he brings a woman to orgasm, she dies. And she's just like, this is horrid. So she calls him out. She calls out Yale for saying, like, oh, does your love for me always need to express itself sexually? Because he's all like, let's go to a hotel and fuck. And
well, to be fair, Kaylin, he says make love.
Oh, he's sorry.
Let's make
love. Let's make love.
Anyways.
And then she's just like, what about other values like warmth and spiritual contact? So she's like, value me in other ways besides you being able to have sex with me. Make love to me.
But again, I feel these, like, which I agree that, like, her character is right in all of these issues, but even though she sees the more aggressive behavior of men as something she doesn't want to deal with, the world totally writes out any of the predatory behaviors with the person that she, you know, with Woody Allen's character, where, okay, so this character is written to see very aggressive masculinity, you know, where it's like, when I fuck a woman, she comes so hard, she dies. Great. But there's a total blind spot set up for that same character of someone she's close to fucking a kid. You know, like,
yeah.
It's just, and that's what's troubling to me about it is with this, and I think it extends to a lot of, like, Woody Allen's female characters, even the very well-written ones or the ones that are, you know, hailed as well-written. He directs your focus in such a specific way, and I feel like these moments of, like, oh, she's smart, she knows what she's talking about, they're put there very deliberately for the sake of the story in the movie, but also so that you notice less when she's ignoring things. Mm-hmm. And
that and her whole pursuit, I mean, she's working on things professionally. She's a journalist, we know what she does for a living. That's good. She's writing things, she's working on different projects.
Right.
But her seems like her main pursuit throughout the whole movie is landing a man that she wants, you know, it's between Yale and Woody Allen's character, and
sure.
She just keeps, like, going back and forth, and she keeps saying, like, I deserve better, but, like, she's trying to stand up for herself, but, like, really...
She's insecure.
It boils down to, like, her pursuit in this movie, if you're just, like, looking at her character and her character's goals and what she's trying to achieve, it's romance. It's a romantic relationship, and
right.
It's, I mean, sure, this is, like, a romantic movie.
Where, I mean, with every character in this movie, every main character is bouncing between two people, at least.
Yeah.
But I think her character is a little different in that the two male characters, so Isaac and then Yale, which, like, ugh, God, hit me up. We get it. He's smart. They both spend a lot of their movie trying to break up with women, where the women spend a lot of time in the movie trying to convince the man that they are worth staying with.
That was
what was more of an issue for me, because everyone is going between multiple people, and I think that in theory that's a part of the point of, like, oh, love is a complicated, blah, blah. But there are scenes, there's a scene between Yale and Mary where Mary is basically just like, no, this is fine, I'm totally fine, it's great. And then we sort of see her try to convince him that she's worth staying with, and in the end he does end up staying with her.
As soon as they break up, she bounces right back to
Woody Allen, right, where they are each other's second choice.
Yeah.
pretty decisively, which is whatever plot point, but there's two different scenes where Woody Allen's trying to break up with Marielle Hemingway in pretty much every single scene.
Yeah.
And then she especially is constantly trying to convince him, like, listen to me, I these are the reasons that you should stay with me. And he's constantly trying to leave her. So even though it's like every character here is bouncing between multiple interests, there's never a pressure on the man to prove to the woman what his worth is. It's assumed that they have value, where the female characters are kind of constantly trying to prove themselves.
Yeah. Which is not at all surprising from a movie that is, like, I mean, Woody Allen is the king of, like, self-indulgent. I'm the writer, director, actor, hero of my own stories every single time. And he makes a point to say, like, several times, and I'm sure you could argue that these are the jokes, but he's like, look how good I am at fucking. His character says it in this movie, and I'd imagine.
I think it's a joke if Ryan Gosling says it. It's not a joke if it's clearly, like, you know, not a stereotypically alpha male is constantly, like, it just doesn't read, especially if you're writing those lines for yourself.
Right.
Like, it's a joke if someone writes that line for Woody Allen, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also a few different, there's like that scene with Mary where she's like, you have a pretty good sense of humor. He's like, well, you don't have to tell me that, I know that.
Oh, right. He's like, I make a fucking living off it, you dumb idiot.
Right. And it's like, but yeah, so anyways, do you want to fuck me? Like, it's just like, I'm great at fucking too. Yeah, there's no pressure on the male characters to prove themselves really in any regard
Excellent point.
And there's no consequences presented to them, except that they won't get fucked. Those are the only consequences.
Right.
There's no, well, there's a joke about going to jail, but that's never a present threat.
Another female character I wanted to talk about who doesn't get much screen time at all, but Emily, Yale's wife.
Right,
basically,
yes.
Every time she's on screen, she's like, how about we have kids? So her whole thing is like, mm-hmm. Let's have kids, I want to have kids, which...
It's all women can think about.
I mean, if a woman wants to have children, so much power to her, but when you write a female character that is apparently the only thing on her mind and we know virtually nothing else about that character.
Anna's also presented as, this is why I want to leave this lady.
Right.
Because he's cheating on his wife with Diane Keaton's character.
Yeah, she's like, nag, 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 kids, kids, kids. And he's like, well, how about I go and fuck other women instead?
Number one, sexist. Number two, bad writing. Mm-hmm. Which is how you could really characterize this whole movie if you wanted to. It's sexist and it is bad writing. Do we have anything else to say about the movie?
Another thing I wanted to talk about is how Manhattan and I would guess a lot of Woody Allen movies based on the ones I've seen are extremely white.
Yeah.
Woody Allen's characters always seem to be friends with only white people. There are no people of color with any... you know, significant screen time or story beats or lines of dialogue in this movie. I think you only see two people of color in the entire movie who are helping him move into his new apartment, but they don't have any lines or anything like that.
Right.
And Woody Allen is Jewish, so he's not, you know, your waspy Protestant Anglo-Saxon type of white. And I want to acknowledge the persecution and prejudice that Jewish people have faced throughout history and also today, but the fact remains that Woody Allen has a habit of populating his movies with only white people, and it's especially crazy for this movie called Manhattan, set in Manhattan, New York City. Where are all the people of color? The other thing I wanted to bring up is the age gap that exists in this movie and then across most Hollywood movies.
I mean, this one is egregious, but then I think is almost the only pro that we could say for the massive age gap between Tracy and Isaac is that at least it is pointed out.
Mm-hmm.
Where in most movies, I don't think it's even pointed out.
Yeah, absolutely right. So I'm taking some stats from an article from Vulture in 2013.
I'm sure things have gotten better since then.
They've gotten so much better. The title of the article is Leading Men Age But Their Love Interests Don't, pointing out that, like, you know, Hollywood stars who are men get older because that's how time works, but their female counterparts, the love interests of their characters, pretty much the same age, which tends to be late 20s, early to mid 30s.
Harrison Ford, he just starred in that new movie, Blade Runner 42069. And there, yeah, I mean, it's just all these...
Sorry, it took me a second to...
I was just like, you know what, maybe notice? I did it. You know what, maybe I did it.
What you said.
And he's still allowed to star in movies. Get Harrison Ford out of movies. He's not allowed anymore. Get him out.
I...
Retire, bitch! Harrison Ford, bitch, retire.
I'm fine with Harrison Ford.
Harrison Ford, bitch, retire.
But he is listed in this article as someone who has love interests that do not get much older and that he usually has a pretty huge age gap with. The closest one, it seems, was when he was in Raiders of the Lost Ark. He was 38. His love interest, Karen Allen, was 29.
Harrison Ford, bitch, retire.
A crazy age difference was when he was in 6 Days, 7 Nights, and Anne Heche was 29 and he was 55. So he got older, his love interest was still in her late 20s. Other examples, so Johnny Depp is a heinous piece of shit, but...
Yeah, Johnny Depp, bitch, retire.
Yeah, I agree with that one.
Literally go to jail.
However, he is in one of my favorite movies, Chocolat. He is 37.
I hate that Alfred Molina had to even meet him.
I don't know if they have any... Do they have scenes together?
Maybe they don't.
I don't remember.
We'll do it.
We'll rewatch it.
Yeah.
But he is 37 in that character, and his love interest, Juliette Binoche, she's 36. So there's only 1 year age difference. which is...
you don't get a trophy for that, though.
No,
because in Transcendence, he's 49, and Rebecca Hall is 30. So that's, you know, full on. We're at daddy status at that point.
Yeah, totally.
It's Tom Cruise, also bad.
Tom Cruise, George Clooney, pretty bad.
Bradley Cooper, pretty bad.
Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou? Another one of my favorite movies. He's 39, and his wife, played by Holly Hunter in that movie, is 42, so she's 3 years older than him.
Amazing.
Richard Gere is another one.
Richard Gere, gerbil butt theory, look it up.
Brad Pitt, Liam Neeson, Tom Hanks, actually, they point out that he tends to be with age-appropriate women in his movies.
Well,
so, there's that.
There's one. There, Woody Allen, I mean, yeah, there's no way you can spin that the relationship between he and Marielle Hemingway's character to make it good, but the age difference is acknowledged, where in most movies, it's not even, it's an assumed thing.
Right, it's just like, of course this handsome older man would have a young 20 or more years younger than him love interest.
And then I think that in movies very commonly, if the inverse does occur, it is immediately acknowledged.
Oh, right.
And made as a point of like, this is like, why would a young, handsome young man want to be involved with an older woman? I rewatched Nightcrawler
last night. I haven't seen that.
It is very good. It reeks of toxic masculinity, but it's I like it a lot. So Jake Gyllenhaal's character, who we're supposed to think is in his late 20s, early 30s, is interested in Rene Russo's character, who's, I think, supposed to be in her 40s or 50s, and he pursues her, and it's constantly, their age difference is constantly brought up, because she's like, why would you want to be with me? I'm too old. And he's like, I'm secure enough to be with an older woman, where that's never the issue in the inverse. Like, a younger woman never has to say, I'm secure enough with myself to be with an older man. It's just assumed that it's gonna happen.
Well, so okay, Cupid, you know, they do all their like analytics of dating patterns
stealing our thoughts and feelings.
And they compiled a graph. It's like, oh, a woman's age versus the age of the men she's attracted to, and it's basically they tend to be attracted to men very close to their same age. It's generally like,
I mean,
a direct correlation.
Old men are gross. I think they're not
true, because
spinning
the,
any heads.
The and this, of course, is, you know, very hetero. This is, you know, for hetero relationships. But a man's age versus the women he's attracted to is, no matter how old he is,
we don't crack 25.
Yeah.
We do not crack 25 all the way up to age 50?
Yeah, 50. Because they ask, what age of women are you most attracted to? And no matter how old a man is, they almost
pretty much
always
kids.
Say either between 20 and 23.
Pretty much fucking kids.
Which,
I can't. I guess I'm not allowed to say 15, so 21?
Just... And it makes... I wonder, is this because men are conditioned to seeing depictions of older men in media with younger women?
And also kind of a complete omission of any woman their age.
Right, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
This is a thing we talk about a lot on the podcast, where rarely do we see women on the screen who are, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s. So often, you know, women in movies are super young. The implication we can draw from that is no one wants to see an older woman on the screen. No one cares about their stories. And of course that's not true, but we're conditioned to think that because we see so much, we consume so much media where women of a certain age are ignored.
Ignored. Oh, well, this is deeply troubling.
And to everyone who's like, oh, well, men are attracted to younger women because they have a biological imperative, because younger women are more fertile and they want to put babies in them. Fuck.
We have population issues. Bitch, retire. Grow up.
So basically the point we want to make is that in recent days, weeks, a lot of women have come forward calling out different men specifically. So it started with Harvey Weinstein in this most recent sort of news cycle. Although
at this point I've honestly lost track. I believe the founder of Just for Laughs was forced out of his position.
Ooh.
The sitting CEO of Amazon Studios was pushed out of his position. It's interesting because it's like we have people like Woody Allen, like Johnny Depp, whose names are very recognizable to us. And then there are people whose names we don't know because they're manipulating behind the scenes whose names are coming out as well. It's a lot.
It's a ton. Screen Junkies? I don't know exactly who, but someone affiliated with Screen Junkies, several allegations brought against him.
It's everywhere.
It's everywhere. It's encouraging that women are coming forward and actions being taken against many of these people. Harvey Weinstein being fired, people losing their jobs and not being allowed to work in Hollywood anymore.
Right.
And there's a lot of work left to do.
And it's painful to have to read these accounts, but feels, you know, important. We hope everyone's looking out for yourself, taking care of yourself through all this. And we, you know, obviously applaud all the victims who are coming forward because that is so hard to do.
So hard to do.
And all the writers who have been able to get those stories out, because that's also so hard to do.
Mm-hmm. And not to say that, you know, there are, I'm sure, plenty of victims who are not ready. Things have happened. They're not ready to come forward about it. And so it's not to say that they're not brave.
No.
You know, they're like, oh, and then, oh, it drives me nuts. Just the emotional labor that any victims have to go through to be like, this thing happened to me and I, you know, I'm revealing it and I'm coming public with it. And then just, the burden shouldn't be on victims to come, like, the burden should be on sexual predators to not fucking be sexual predators.
Right, but that's never gonna happen. And so it falls upon the people who are, these just awful things are happening to them, to also then be the ones to have to relive it over and over and over in order for any consequence to happen. Which brings me to just some food for thought, because I feel like for years and years and years, since the Woody Allen allegations surfaced, since the Bill Cosby allegations surfaced, there's always a lot of talk of, like, how can we separate the art from the artist? Can I still enjoy Bill Cosby's stand-up? Can I still enjoy this movie about Woody Allen fucking a kid? Honestly, and I have heard a lot of, mostly men, some women, mostly men, explain to me their views on why they think that, you know, but I personally am at a point where I think separating art from artists at this point is just like a dangerous precedent to set.
Agree.
It allows predators to continue making art without consequence. We are not at a lack for artists in the world. There are a lot of artists with a lot of important things to say. And I think that saying that, you know, if you're an artist and a predator, you can't. There are a lot of voices that need to be heard that will gladly occupy that space.
Who aren't sexual predators.
Who are not predators. There should be consequences for everyone. There's no way Woody Allen should be allowed to be making movies. There's no way that Bill Cosby should be on any stage at any time unless that stage is a court and he's being sent to jail.
Mm-hmm.
Don't see Louis C.K.'s new movie, which is the clearest homage to Manhattan that you will find. Just bad. Bad, bad, bad. Hey, Caitlin.
Yes.
Does Manhattan pass the Bechdel test?
Manhattan does pass the Bechdel test.
But it passes in the most disturbing exchange of all time.
Yeah. So the scene, it's Mary, Isaac, Yale, and Tracy all walking down the street. Mary and Tracy, when they meet, they say, like, hi, hello. That barely counts as a conversation.
Right.
But then later on...
Technically, yeah.
Later on, Mary says, what do you do, Tracy? Tracy says, I go to high school.
Hee hee ha ha ho ho.
Mary says, oh, really? So, you know, three adults and then one teenager are just hanging out. And Mary's like, hey, what do you do for a living? And Tracy's like, I study for my English fucking exams.
Yeah, that, what a pass. Good for you. Oh, well, we hope you enjoyed this bonus. I would say this is an emergency bonus.
Yeah, this is an emergency episode of the Bechdel cast. Thanks for listening.
If you want a regular bonus episode, you can sign up for our Patreon at patreon.com/Bechdelcast, where we do two bonus episodes a month that are, you know, they may be as painful as this one. They may not be. You'll have to
probably not
sign up to find out.
They'll probably be a little less us screaming
But also, if you don't like that, why are you listening to this show? Grow up, bitch, retire.
So yeah, check us out. You can go to our website. You can pledge us $5 a month on Patreon to get exclusive content, and that helps us out with our production costs and all of that. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook.
Fuck off, Woody Allen.
Fuck off, Woody Allen. Fuck off, Harvey Weinstein. And fuck off any sexual predator in Hollywood and everywhere.
If you're a man, be fucking helpful.
Be helpful.
Everyone else, keep your head up.
Listen and believe women and value women.
Love you. Bye.
Bye.
This is Raquel Willis from Queer Chronicles. Right now, there are close to 500 anti-LGBTQ plus bills in state legislatures across the country. Lambda Legal is leading the charge against these hateful bills that target mostly trans and non-binary people. You can fight discrimination and help write the next chapter of Lambda Legal history. To learn more about their open cases and to donate, visit lambdalegal.org. That's lambdalegal.org.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender-inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.